Believe it or not, we're hitting the home stretch of the melee for mayor. 7 Democratic candidates enter, only one will move on to the April general election. City Treasurer Tashara Jones is hoping to be the Democratic standard bearer. She joins us next on Politically Speaking to lay out her vision for St. Louis. So let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, a candid conversation with the Show Me State's biggest political newsmakers.
I'm Jason Rosenbaum.
And I'm Joe Manis.
That's Eric Greitens, Navy SEALs running for governor, and I'm really, really glad to be on with you, Jason and Joe.
I'm going to push back on these regulators.
I'm doing this for the people.
I was encouraged along the way, not just by my family, but by a lot of teachers and professors, and knew when I was in college that I would run for office someday.
We're very excited about the prospect of having some more free market solutions.
Even though after the conversation, I still might not agree.
We want our listeners to get a real sense of what drives these people.
They're actually people with a story to tell. And welcome to the Politically Speaking podcast. I'm your host, Jason Rosenbaum, a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. Joining me in studio today is
Joe Manis
and
Rachel Lippman.
And joining us as our special guest, we have
Tashara Jones, treasurer of the city of St. Louis.
I want to thank you very much for coming today because you are rounding out our Melee for Mayor series. You are
on the Democratic side, at least.
On the Democratic side, at least. We are going to have a couple of Republican candidates on, so our goal here was to give St. Louis voters as much information about candidates as possible for this historic and vitally important election. And you're the last person, so
save the best for last.
Of the Democrats.
Of the Democrats. So you were on the show in 2013, and you did talk about yourself then. But since a lot of people may not have heard that show, we want the St. Louis voters to know a little bit more about you personally, professionally, and politically. So who is Tashara Jones? My first question.
Tashara Jones is a single mom of the most adorable 9-year-old named Aiden, who you can find on Twitter at #StuffAidenSays. I am also have a bachelor's in finance from Hampton University, master's in health administration from St. Louis University School of Public Health, and recently completed the the program for state and local executives at Harvard University's JFK School of Government.
And what prompted you to get involved in politics and give the listeners a sense of what you've done before you became treasurer?
Great. So in 2002, Lisa Suggs asked me to consider finishing out her unexpired term as committee woman in the 8th Ward. And I jumped at the chance and had a great time doing that, ran for re-election in 2004 and won. In 2004, Robin Wright Jones asked me to run for her seat as she was terming out in 2008. And that was the 63rd district at the time, which encompassed downtown Soulard, Lafayette Square, all the way west to the Botanical Gardens, but take out Compton Heights. And then I ran for served 2 terms in the Missouri House, became the first African American and female minority floor leader in Missouri history, then ran for treasurer in 2012, and became the first African American female treasurer in St. Louis history.
That race was pretty interesting because it was a 4-person race. I think all 3 had a lot of money. I think you had the least amount of money out of the 4. Is that correct?
Yes, I did.
But you obviously made a dollar count because you won by a pretty decisive margin. I don't
10
know the
points.
Yeah.
Which in a 4-person race is.
That was a pretty crazy primary because there was also the Clay Carnahan battle for the congressional
seat.
So there was the turnout was higher than usual. So in many ways, you surprised many of the pundits who had predicted this or that person to win.
Oh, everybody predicted that Brian Wobbe was going to take it.
Yeah,
and we'll he did not. Well, he came in last place.
He did come in last place.
But yeah,
we don't want to rub
dwell
salt
on
in the
him
wound.
Too much.
What do you think caused you to win that race? Because as I said in the backdrop, it was a competitive race. Your opponents did have more money than you. In the mayor's race, people have more money than you.
Yes.
What was kind of your secret to success there?
We knew that in races that are that have multiple candidates, the only way you win is in the streets. So we put all of our money into field and into a ground campaign and into mail and into, you know, those old tried and true campaign methods, going knocking on doors and talking to people.
Well, and you have some experience from that. I mean, from your family as well.
Yes.
You probably should mention that.
Yes. Your father is Burvis Jones, former comptroller, and he's still pretty active in the political scene. I know he's been helped out some candidates who have been successful besides yourself.
Yes, he also helped Mavis Thompson, Vernon Betts, and Kim Gardner.
Yeah.
Now, as treasurer, you replaced a very long-term treasurer, Larry Williams. So when you came in, are there certain things that you felt you had to do right away and just sort of how you've approached the office since you've been there?
Yes, absolutely. So when a person has an office for, you know, 30 plus years, there are a lot of procedures and policies that are just kind of ingrained or just not documented. So we found that we needed to make our HR procedures more robust and documented. Our employees had never received job descriptions or performance evaluations, so we started that process. Our HR policy handbook was 30 pages in entirety, so we documented more of our HR policies and procedures because we also had a number of EEOC lawsuits outstanding at the time. Also, the treasurer is the parking supervisor, which is probably the most unique elected office in the country, probably in the world. Believe me, I've looked. And so we also started to started along the process of upgrading our meter infrastructure to match that of other metropolitan cities where you can take a credit card or app as a form of payment.
Yeah, for full disclosure, I have that app on my phone.
As
I use it all the time. So, but continue.
Yes. And then also we looked around the country to see what other treasurers were doing in, you know, in other areas and found that there was a movement in financial empowerment services, which is literally helping people make better decisions with their money. And so we started the Office of Financial Empowerment in City Hall and renovated some space to a classroom and a computer lab, as well as some office space for one-on-one counseling because financial decisions are pretty sensitive and people appreciate privacy when talking to someone about those. And since then, we've also launched the College Kids Children's Savings Account Program, which gives a college savings account to every kindergartner in a public school, district, or charter. And we loaded with the first $50 from residual parking revenue, and that has been touted as one of the most innovative children's savings programs in the country.
So how does this then translate into an office that there is a long-term incumbent there but hasn't had the scrutiny or some of the scandals that maybe the treasurer's office had had before you took over?
I think it translates in that, you know, taking a look at you know, just trying to be more innovative. I think when you're in an office longer than, say, three terms, things become a little bit stale. And, you know, and you're not paying attention to other parts of the country and some of the things get swept under the rug, so to speak. So I think having a fresh set of eyes at existing problems is what we've been doing in the treasurer's office, and that's what we hope to take into the mayor's office.
Now, as obviously you're aware, there's been some controversy, I mean, that some of your opponents or critics have pointed to some of your travel. Do you want to talk about that a little bit and why you feel that was necessary for the office and just sort of how you approached it?
Well, yes, because the office, again, it was mired in corruption. It did a lot of things inefficiently, and I felt that it was best to look at best practices and research-based policies from around the country in order to upgrade the office. And I've documented every trip. Every trip was related to business, and, you know, and if it wasn't, would I be that brazen to document it and ask for reimbursement?
That's a good point.
So, yeah. Are you surprised that it's become an issue, and why do you think it became an issue?
It's totally political. If you look at the people who are behind the story, i.e. the couple of aldermen who are behind the story, you know, they passed my budget every year for the last 4 years and never made an issue about travel. And these are documents that I submit to the comptroller's office. I'm the only elected official that has to go through this process. Aldermen have an expense account that they don't have to report how they spend it. They can even transfer to salary and pocket it. I can't do that, and I chose not to do that. I wanted to make sure that we were transparent in everything that we do.
So So let's transition into what you would want to do if you are the next mayor of the city. I'm just going to ask a really basic question. Why did you decide to run for this office?
St. Louis is at a crossroads, and the world is watching us right now. And when I say the world is watching us, I think the world is watching us post-Ferguson. Even though that's a suburb of St. Louis, the world is really watching us and how we are going to react, how we're going to change, how we're going to move forward, how we're going to be progressive. And I feel that I have a unique skill set that I bring to the table in being innovative and thinking about people first and making sure that, you know, that prosperity and justice are things that all families can achieve. And right now, St. Louis has too many gaps, and we are still the fifth most segregated city in the country. We have gaps between neighborhoods, gaps between haves and have-nots, and gaps between races, and we need a mayor who's going to bring us together.
So when you look at the field and sort of what do you see as your biggest issues? I mean, you've talked just now about why you're running, mm-hmm. but as you're going around talking to people and going door to door, what are the biggest issues on people's minds and how would you address that?
I think that the biggest things on people's minds are making sure that government is accountable to the people. And that we are spending their resources wisely, and also that we're taking care of the little things. And that's why I think we've seen such a groundswell against the stadium, both recent stadium projects, the MLS stadium as well as the Ram stadium. Because if we don't do the little things right, they won't trust us to do the big things. So people are worried about trash pickup. People are worried about their roads. People are worried about crime and public safety. People are worried about equitable development, sustainable development north of Del Mar and places south of Arsenal. People are also worried about the education system, even though the public schools have recently received their reaccredited. How do we keep that momentum going?
Let's drill down into sort of that development issue a little bit. What would you see as being the proper way for the city to approach it, the proper strategy, use of incentives? What's your take on how the city should kind of bring and attract development?
Mm-hmm. So let me state this first. I think there's a preconceived notion that I am against development incentives. I'm not. I just think they should be used more responsibly. And I think that in the last 15 years, we've gone a little too far in how we hand out development incentives. I've been quoted as saying we hand them out like Halloween candy because we have given away over $700 million in TIFs and tax abatements in the last 15 years. And I think that we haven't done that in a responsible manner. And when I talk about being responsible, I'm talking about community benefit agreements that include things like jobs with living wages, investment in other areas, workforce centers on site, and making sure that if we are going to invest our tax dollars in a large development project, then we need to make sure that we're getting something for our as a return on that investment.
As you know, St. Louis is not in a bubble. You know, St. Louis County has a number of municipalities that would aggressively use tax incentives to possibly take a potential city project and move it to Maryland Heights or Chesterfield. What type of balance do you have to strike to make sure you are using incentives responsibly, but you're not losing out on big ticket projects to other mm-hmm. parts of the region?
Well, I mean, you have to have more than, you know, a couple of conversations. I think that by the time our Board of Aldermen receives that those development projects, everything's already baked in, and there's no room for discussion. There's no room for amendment. There's no room for anything. And I think that process should be a little more public. I think people would people that live in the areas that the development project's going to go in would appreciate having some input on the project before it gets voted on, before it's already set in stone.
So how do you as the mayor do that? How do you set that tone?
I think it takes a strong mayor to come in and say, hey, these are the things my community needs. And, you know, we're willing to work with you. We're willing to, to look at what investment incentives that we have on the table. But these are the things that my community needs in return.
Continuing on the development angle and talking about something you talked about before, stadiums have been on top of mind in the Board of Aldermen in the last few weeks. And in the past year, because we're also talking about the Rams Stadium situation, which you opposed publicly, kind of lay out why you don't think it's appropriate for the city to invest a lot of money in these facilities? Because I've heard both arguments, but I want to hear yours.
Or is it ever appropriate? Like, is there ever a moment where you might say, yes, we could put public money into this project?
I think the moment when I say, yes, we should put public money in is when we have all of the counties of the region at the table. And we don't. We just have the city at the table. We need some sort of regional authority where we can all put our money in for new attractions, because they are used regionally, but they are only paid for by the city, except for the Dome, which is a third the city, a third the county, and a third the state.
Well, how do you convince when I say the county, I'm not just talking about the county executive. I'm also potentially talking about county voters, because the county executive has been pretty adamant that any stadium funding would be contingent on a public vote. How do you get, as a mayor, I know your domain is limited, but how do you convince county voters or St. Charles County voters to buy into something like that?
Well, you have to go out and talk to the people.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've done that. I don't think we've done a good job at outreach. Mm-hmm. You know, we think that St. Charles is just across the Missouri River and it's just this entity out there. You know, what are we doing to work regionally together? What are we doing to talk to each other's constituents? And I don't think that happens I don't think it happens much.
I mean, aside from the Dome, most of the other sports-related development projects downtown have generally been footed by the city of St. Louis or tax incentives to the private people in the case of Ballpark Village. Are there lessons from those projects that you would take forward if you were mayor as far as any new ones?
The primary lesson I would take forward is as we're looking at improvements to Scottrade and the convention center, is that we don't have any capital improvement funds set aside. We knew this facility was aging, and we didn't put any funds aside for capital improvements. That's one of the things that I do right now in the treasurer's office. As we've built garages, when we bond those garages, we put set money aside for capital improvement. So when it comes where, you know, we need to do some maintenance to the garage or new lights concrete, you know, reshoring the concrete, we already have money there and it doesn't come out of our operating funds. We didn't do that.
So you're, unlike some of the other guests, you're not on the board of aldermen, so you didn't have a vote on whether to put the sales tax and the use tax diversion measures on the ballot. Regardless of whether you win or lose, you're still going to be an elected official in April.
Yes.
And you're still going to have a voice. What would you tell voters to do on those two initiatives, the sales tax increase primarily from Metrolink, and then the use tax measure that would steer the use tax toward the soccer stadium if the sales tax passes?
I would tell voters to vote no on April 4th. I think we need to go back to the drawing board.
Why?
On both of them.
On both of them.
Can you explain why?
Because I feel like the projects were rushed through, knowing that there's a new administration that's going to be sworn in the end of April, and that's going to be baggage that the new mayor has to carry into his or her administration. I think it's really short-sighted to do that, to rush through that project so quickly, again, without having more public input as to, you know, what they want to see that sales tax used for.
Now, one of the reasons I asked that question is I know you've been a big, strong proponent of a north-south Metrolink, and I think that the current mayor has said that this sales tax will at least
partially
60, do that.
The goal is 60%.
So do you feel like this sales tax needs to be more directed toward that goal? And I guess the other question is, do you also need to continue engagement with the county for a north-south Metrolink to happen?
Yes, absolutely. I think more engagement needs to happen. And I'm open to having meetings with Mr. Stenger should I win, but also I think we need to look at other ways that other cities have funded transit expansion through public-private partnerships. That's not even on the table.
Now, related to that, I'm going to kind of segue a little bit into crime, because this is sort of related to a lot of the stuff that's been going on. Among other things, you've been talking about, you've been cooler to the idea of putting more police on the streets, talking instead about having social workers in the department. You've talked about closing down the workhouse, and some have I mean, there's been some controversy over that.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about those things, why you were proposing their approaches that you're taking and how you think that would help the city?
Well, the approach about social workers in the police department, we got from other cities. Los Angeles and Miami currently have social workers in their police department, and it has seen, and they've increased their satisfaction amongst citizens with the police department and treated people more humane. And police handle a whole host of things that they're not equipped to handle. And I think having social workers helps police as well. And when I talk about, I think we have enough cops or police, I don't think they're being deployed effectively. And then another thing I'd like to do is morale is at an all-time low. And I think that their voices aren't being heard in this entire process. When I took over the treasurer's office, morale was at an all-time low with my employees, and so we hired some consultants and, you know, really went and talked to people about what they wanted to see out of the office going forward. I think police and firefighters would appreciate having a voice in how their department moves forward in the next administration.
Playing a little bit of devil's advocate here, though, could you make the argument, or police could make the argument, that morale is so low because they're overworked, they don't have the resources that they need, they need to put more officers on the street to avoid the mandatory overtime, and to, you know, they feel like they need additional staffing. If they came to you and said that is what would improve morale, does that change your stance on the need for more officers?
Absolutely. If that's what they say, and then also, I think that we need I think we would benefit from having a public safety director who has experience in decreasing urban crime in cities of our size, and then also replacing the police chief. I think that leadership is also a big portion of why the morale is low.
I guess you just
stole your question.
So you don't think Sam Dotson should remain as police chief?
No.
Can you explain why?
Because I think a lot of the things that I just think it's time for new leadership. I'll just say that. It's time for new leadership, and everything has to be on the table.
Now, are there any people who are in the police department or from somewhere else who you sort of have an eye on as possible, either replacements for as chief or as public safety director?
No, I do not. I'd like to do a nationwide search.
Okay, now I did want to ask you about the workhouse because I know there's been some talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
I've had I've had some officials tell me that one of the things that they weren't sure you were aware of is the fact that the city gets money from a lot of people who are put there because they're there temporarily for federal offenses or other crimes. So the city gets money for housing them. So they say the city would lose money aside from the other issue of where mm-hmm. do you put the people. So, I mean, do you want to talk about that, your whole philosophy about the workhouse?
So at any point in time, when you look at who's at the workhouse, they are there because they are poor, sick, minority, or are on drugs. So I'm talking about making sure that we have humane treatment and proper treatment for the right reason. So if someone has a mental illness or is on drugs, they don't need to be at the workhouse. They need to be in treatment. Third of all, we need to eliminate cash bail because people are there because they can't afford cash bail. And we've seen time and time again how, or more recently with a young woman who took her life while waiting for cash, you know, waiting for her trial because she couldn't afford cash bail. So I'm talking about treating people who more humanely within our criminal justice system. And when we built the new jail downtown, it was so we could close the workhouse, and that never happened. So let's take a look and triage all of our current population and those who don't need to be there, find them the resources that they need. And then I still think we can close the workhouse and use the city jail because it is inhabitable. No one should be there.
So I want to ask about police community relations. That's kind of the euphemism that I just used to talk about the relationships between police officers and the African-American community. One of the mm-hmm. things I've noticed living in St. Louis for 7 years, I live in Southwest St. Louis. I love living there, but it's also 99% white. It's middle to upper middle class.
Mm-hmm.
And the relationship between the populace there is a lot different than even a place like Shaw, which is more diverse, or mm-hmm. places in North City or South City, where it's predominantly African-American. I think it's incumbent on whoever wins this mayoral office, since they're going to be in charge of the police department, to be a leader in forging better relationships between police and African Americans. So I would like you to talk a little bit about how you're going to do that, because I see that as a huge challenge going forward. And it was a challenge even before Michael Brown was shot and killed.
Right, right. This didn't just happen as of August 9th, 2014. This has been bubbling under the surface for years. And I think, again, we need to make sure that our police have the proper training and really focus on community and police relations. You know, that's more than just, you know, police playing basketball, you know, with the kids one day. You know, we need to make sure that they are infused in our normal communities and interacting with people on a day-to-day basis, because, you know, there are tons of people who have memories of the cop that lives on their street who interacted with all the kids. My neighbor's is a police officer, and I never see him because he's working 18, 20-hour days. And it's funny, the other night my son and I were coming home, and he saw his car in the driveway, and he says, "Mom, our neighbor's home. I can't believe it." And so I think we need to, you know, to again look at other cities where community police relations have gotten better between police and the African American community, see what they're doing right, bring those programs to St. Louis and tweak them for our environment and let them roll.
Does that mean are you thinking that perhaps the residency requirement needs to be changed, remove the 7-year out that police and firefighters have?
I think they already that was removed when they came back after they became civil servants again, right? So now it's a residency requirement. I think the residency requirement is a larger question on whether or not we on our whole HR workforce issue altogether, because we have a lot of positions that go unfilled in the city because of the residency requirement.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly how it works here, but I know, for example, in the city of Chicago, where I have relatives, a lot of people who have a residency requirement live close to the border somewhere, either on the north side or the south side. I'm pretty sure that occurred here, too. A lot of police and firefighters live in my neck of the woods in South St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just because there's a residency requirement doesn't necessarily mean they live all over the city.
Right,
basically.
Exactly.
So I want to talk about city-county merger.
Mm-hmm.
This is a topic where I think a mayor or county executive have moral authority. They can work behind the scenes. But in essence, it's kind of up to the voters to decide.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know your general philosophy on that question first.
I think we need to get our house in order, and I think St. Louis County needs to also get its house in order before we think about merging. When I talk about us, I mean we have a $20 million looming budget shortfall. We also have a $252 million looming pension shortfall for our pension is underfunded for city employees. We need to, you know, get our house in order in terms of crime and unemployment and a whole host of things, I think, before we open our doors and let someone in. And when I talk about the county, I think, you know, some consolidation should be in order. We have municipalities that are as small as 13 people. And then also we also need to look at other metro areas that have already been through this, and I don't think we have, to see, you know, what were some of the arguments for, the arguments against, and what were some of the compromises made so everybody felt like they are whole.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the biggest thing about this right now is fear of the unknown and what it's going to look like. And unless you're having that conversation of, you know, the possibilities of what it could look like, we're still going to be in the same place, you know, 4 years hence.
Now, why do you think that this has been something that's been discussed for decades? And initially, the county voters were totally against it. There's been some changes in some of the proposals. Some would just have the city re-enter the county as another municipality.
Mm-hmm.
If you were trying to promote that to county voters on why it's in their interest, what would you say?
I don't know right now, because I don't know what it looks like. You know what I mean? And the only the only model we have thus far is the county reentering, the city reentering the county as another municipality. Mm-hmm. I think there are other models that we can look like that that totally realign our government. I think this is also an opportunity to do that, and not just become the 92nd municipality.
One of the things that I've heard kind of through the peripheral is, if any proposals put forward, that someone like Rex Singfeld would put it toward a statewide ballot because it might be easier to pass as opposed to putting it to the city and county voters. If that occurs, and that's what happened with local control, by the way,
what would be
your posture as mayor if that happened? Would you oppose that type of strategy, or would you possibly support it if you like the proposal, essentially?
I would say it depends. It depends on what is, because the devil's in the details. Mm-hmm. I won't say what I was going to say about Rex. And I think what happened with local control of the police department, there were certain details that we didn't know were there until after we got it, and then now our hands are tied, so to speak.
Do you want to give some examples so our listeners understand what you're talking about?
Well, number one, how our current chief became chief from the rank of captain was instead of lieutenant colonel, which is how the process usually goes. And I think that led to the morale shift in the department.
But he also became chief before local control. He was appointed by the Board of Police Commissioners. So are you saying that the inability to get a new chief on board after local control, or are there other things that you're thinking of?
That was my main one of the main things. How they're seen as civil servant, or their interaction with the Civil Service Commission is another point of contention for the current members of the Civil Service Commission, and that they don't have the same sort of procedures that any other civil servant has, because they sort of police themselves when it comes to HR issues. But back to putting this on the ballot, again, you know, it would all depend on what's in the bill.
The reason I'm asking that question is, as a St. Louis City resident, I understand the reason you would take it statewide, because it's easier to pass. But I would also be very uncomfortable with, like, Nottoway County and Saline County deciding this issue.
Right. Don't want somebody in Nixa deciding if we should merge.
Yeah. But some people may think that's an easier strategy, hence the reason I'm asking the question.
Yeah, although it's unclear. I don't want to get too much in the weeds, but I'm not sure that Singfeld, who's a major donor for politicians, primarily Republicans, but some Democrats in the region and in the state, is going to get involved in this right now. But in any case, as you're looking at the landscape, are there other key issues before we get into some of the nitty gritties about the campaign and some of the dynamics? Are there other major issues that you think that aren't being discussed? I mean, I did a story a couple of weeks ago where they were talking about many of the veterans were saying, you guys aren't talking enough about the city's financial problems.
About the city's financial problems.
I mean, how do you see some of this? And how would you address some of the city's financial problems? Because I've been told there's a looming $20 million hole
there is,
for whoever there is. Becomes the next mayor.
I said it publicly. Number one, we haven't taken a look at all of our revenue streams in years. And when I got into the treasurer's office, we looked at the ordinances that control the treasurer's office, and they hadn't been updated since the 60s. So I think we need to take a hard look at all of our revenue streams and again, look around the country to see how cities who have had looming budget shortfalls have attacked this to find different revenue streams. And try to see what we can do to replicate some of those models. I don't have any idea what they would be, but I just know that our current revenue streams haven't been updated in decades. And then also our credit rating keeps getting downgraded because of that, because we give out so much money in tax incentives and tax abatements. Because our poverty rate is double the national average, because we have a large amount of our property are controlled by nonprofit, large nonprofit organizations. So we have to take a look at where all our revenue is coming from and where it isn't coming from and start having those serious conversations.
Now, before we delve into politics, I do want to talk about education, because although the mayor does not have direct control over the Board of Education, I think that they still play an incredibly important role as in the bully pulpit. And some direct things, like appointing a member to the SAB.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going to be your philosophy toward education? Because I know that the current mayor has been big on touting an increase in charter schools.
Mm-hmm.
That's an issue that you were heavily involved in the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also talking about keeping the momentum going for St. Louis public schools.
Mm-hmm.
Just my first question on that, what would be your general philosophy toward education if you're mayor?
You're right. Even though the mayor doesn't have any direct authority over the schools, any of our schools, it doesn't mean that the city can't be a better partner. And that means working with principals and school leaders, no matter where our children are going to school, to see what we can do to remove barriers to education for our children. And as we saw in Jennings, it was as simple as putting in a washer and dryer in a school so parents can have access to wash their clothes so their babies can have clean clothes to go to school, you know, every day. So what are the barriers and what can we do to find the resources for those barriers? And what can we do to do whatever we can to help our children.
And I want to be clear here. I've asked this to every candidate, so I'm not just picking on you. Where does Aiden go to school? Does he go private, public, charter school?
Aiden's in the Clayton District. We're in the transfer program.
Okay. Yeah. So the reason I asked that question, I think one of the biggest challenges going forward is keeping the momentum of the St. Louis public schools going. It
yes.
just regained accreditation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one of the things that also needs to be said is a lot of people like me who are white, middle class, upper middle class, We tend to send our kids to private schools or charter schools, or I don't know if we send them to
parochial schools.
Mm-hmm. And there's that choice there, and some people do it for various reasons. Some people like Catholic education. Some people don't have any good options elsewhere. What do you think it's going to take to get more people to buy into the St. Louis public school systems, including people that don't currently send their schools there? People in my neck of the woods.
It's going to take the mayor, along with the superintendent and school board, using their bully pulpit to really tout the successes of the school district, which we're starting to see happen with the billboards that are going up, with the commercials we hear on the radio. But it's really going to take, making sure that everybody knows that, you know, our schools are fully accredited, you know, and letting people know, you know, the school around the corner from your house or whatever, it's fully accredited, it's great school. These are the metrics those kids are getting. So I think once they start to tell their story more and use that option, you know, I think people will start to come back to the school.
Would there ever be a moment where you could see bringing your son back into the St. Louis public schools? And what would it take for you to have Aiden go to his neighborhood school?
So Aiden's neighborhood school is KIPP. Victory Academy. It's actually right around the corner from us. And KIPP is a great program, but right now he's in the third grade. I think they only go up to second.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, not an option for us.
Mm-hmm.
And Soldane International is around the corner as a high school. And they have great programs there. So, you know, that is an option. But also, you know, picking up a kid and taking him away from his friends just because mommy wants to be socially responsible, yeah. I don't know if he'd forgive me for that.
And I want to make it clear, this is not an easy decision for people. I know
we had
another mayoral candidate, Antonio French, mention the fact that his son goes to school in South St. Louis because the public school around his neck of the woods for him isn't good enough. It's apparently low performing. So As a parent myself, it's not a binary decision.
Right.
And even though I think we all want to send our kids to public schools,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's not an option for people. But I think
right.
the momentum seems to be going in the right direction.
I think what also has to happen is, you know, so North St. Louis, for example, which is, you know, people in North St. Louis feel abandoned and a lot of families have left North St. Louis. And until we have more families, more middle class families in North St. Louis and more, you know, families, period, then the schools will start to get better. So, you know, it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. The schools are bad because they've neglected the families that are up there. So until we start paying attention to the families that are in those neighborhoods, we're going to continue to see this problem.
Now, I'd like to shift
yes.
a bit into the campaign. Okay, whether or not it's correct, it's a fact that racial politics have been a long-standing influence in mm-hmm. St. Louis citywide elections.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the case of the Democratic primary, there has been a lot of, quote, conventional wisdom that because the five major candidates, the five major Democratic candidates, four African-American and one is white, that in and of itself, forgetting views on issues, forgetting anything,
right,
gives the white candidate an edge, in part because Missouri also has open primaries, so you have Republicans or others who may take a Democratic ballot in March.
Mm-hmm.
How do you sort of see the whole racial dynamics in this contest, and how has that affected how you campaign?
So I am aware of racial dynamics in the campaign. However, we are campaigning with everyone, our message of One St. Louis means, you know, everyone is included, no matter you're white, black, Latino, Asian American, whatever. And we have done outreach to those communities as well. I did a meet and greet, a Hispanic meet and greet with some of my Hispanic elected officials who are elected officials around the country who came into Canvas for me last weekend. And the thing I kept hearing over and over again is no one's doing any outreach to the Latino or Hispanic community. The other thing is, I think voters are smarter than that. You know, our voting demographic is not monolithic anymore, as we saw in Vernon Betts' race as well as Kim Gardner's race. And Vernon Betts more so than anybody else, because there were three African Americans and one white in that race.
Yes.
And he won with, what, 40% of the vote?
It was a pretty sizable victory.
Very sizable victory.
Yeah.
So I think people in general, St. Louis's in general, want to see a progressive candidate who's going to stand up for their beliefs and someone that they can trust.
Now, I'm going to tread a little bit carefully here because it's my policy not to criticize other media outlets, but you have been critical of the media coverage of your campaign. You recently wrote a letter basically explaining that has gone pseudo-viral.
I want to get pseudo-viral. No, I think you have LeVar Burton jumping in the
race.
Howard Dean.
I want to just ask you, A, to explain why you've done that, and B, if you think it's an effective strategy, because I'm not trying to compare it to Trump or anything, because you're here right now, you're talking to a bunch of media people, but I could also see people saying the attack the media strategy may not be effective. So can you just kind of explain your philosophy on that?
So, I don't think it was attacking the media in general, but attacking the Post-Dispatch. Because I have always respected St. Louis Public Radio. I think you guys are very objective and very fair when it comes to reporting, and you report all sides of the story. I particularly looked at the coverage of the mayoral race, and there was much more coverage on my candidacy and my mistakes in the past and my so-called business dealings than any other candidate. And that had started happening in mid-December, and it was every 2 weeks, it was something new, something new, something new, and they hadn't reported on any other candidate. And they were, whether or not they knew it or could realize that or not, they were shaping up to I knew that they weren't going to endorse me. I knew that going in. So, and then I think the straw that broke the camel's back was the editorial piece about bringing down the high-flying treasure, and they need to bring her down to earth, which was laced with overt racism, in my opinion. And so I decided that it was time to tell the truth. And I did so through a letter to the editorial board when I declined their interview. And I never expected that letter to go viral. I just wanted to make sure that I was telling the truth and standing up and being the person who my parents raised me to be.
Why do you think it has captured so much attention? I mean, your words, without getting into the specific outlet, but just there's been people who've commented from all over, just in general. Is there a particular reason why you think it's captured the interest and attention?
I think the way that I started the letter, which was responding to the head of the editorial board's reasons for saying that the region was dying because of blight and graffiti, And we know that those aren't the reasons why our region is dying, or blight and graffiti are killing our region. We know that that's not the reason. We know what we need to do to solve our problems. And blight, yes, is part of it, but that it's a larger issue.
Well, it's not like poverty is just a newfound revelation in St. Louis. I mean, my grandfather lived north of Del Mar, and he joked before he died he was so poor that he couldn't afford a middle name. And this has been an issue in urban places, but especially St. Louis, even when the population was much larger. Mm-hmm. And frankly, in 2013, when Mayor Slay was running for re-election, I don't think we heard a lot about, you know, blight, poverty, crime as major issues. I think that the emphasis was, you know, the startup community is getting better and, you know, all these young people are moving in. And granted, this was 4 years ago. My memory's a little fuzzy, but it is interesting to me that now crime is a major issue and now blight is a major issue when they've been longstanding problems for decades, essentially.
I think a lot of it also has to do with crime had gotten lower at that point.
Yes.
So it wasn't as much of an issue. They were homicides were down, crime overall was down. So if you can't sling that mud at your opponent if there's nothing to really sling mud about. So you also have an incumbent who's a little bit more able to set the tone of the campaign, I think.
But what do you think about that? Because it does seem like that those issues that I mentioned have emphasis now, but maybe didn't have it in past campaigns. I mean, it's not like people weren't living that reality. Mm-hmm. So why do you think that happened?
Well, in 2012, I focused on poverty as a part of the treasurer's election when I talked about the unbanked and the underbanked and how they spend more money getting access to their paychecks than normal people do that have access to, say, financial services. So, you know, poverty has always been something that I have focused on as treasurer. So I was talking about it in 2012, even though they didn't talk about it in the 2013 mayor's race. So I was always aware of where poverty, education, homelessness, all these things are linked, and crime and public safety are all linked, and have structured my platform to address that.
Now, one of the things that's come up just lately is the issue of endorsements. While I personally don't think they have the power they used to have, they still do capture some attention.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Mayor Slay has endorsed one of your opponents, but the county assessor, Jake Zimmerman, recently came out for you. And the former Secretary of State, who was the former Democratic candidate for the U.S. Senate, Jason Kander, also recently came out for you. What role do you think endorsements have in this contest, and how are you using the ones that you got to make your case?
I think endorsements also, if you have enough of them sometimes, because I didn't have some of these same endorsements in the treasurer's race, lead people to believe that there is some consensus building around a certain candidate. And we also have several committee people and alder people also supporting this race, more than our opponents. And we're using all of those people strategically to try to make sure that we're getting out the vote in those wards.
Well, we want to just thank you for coming in. We've got 48 minutes and 37 seconds of great conversation.
Yes.
And I'm very happy we were able to get all seven candidates on. We want, as I said on the outset, we want to make sure that the St. Louis voters get as much information about the people that are going to be the mayor. This is vitally important.
Yes. And for those who haven't heard some of the previous ones, you can go to our website, click on where it says Politically Speaking under programs, and there's a list of all of the podcasts, and these are all prominently marked.
We'll also be building a page, a one-stop shop, if you will, as we approach a little bit closer to the primary, which is closer than I think any of us want to admit at this
20
point.
20 days.
20 days. For all of our stories, stlpublicradio.org. Follow me on Twitter at Jay Rosenbaum. Follow Joe on Twitter at
Jay Manis. That's J-M-A-N-N-I-E-S.
Follow Rachel on Twitter at
R. Lipman, two P's, two N's.
How can people follow your campaign on the World Wide Web?
At Tashara, the number 4 mayor .com, and also at Tashara for mayor on Twitter.
We'll be back next time. Until then, so long.
Come on in, just take a seat. We're going to find y'all something real good to eat. I'm Allie.
Ready.
And I'll be right back with your drinks. Can I take your order? Do you need some time? Did you really need a cola with that extra lime? Would you like change back, or can I keep this dime?